Hi, good vach. This is Yisachar Wartel. Good Chodesh, everybody. It's Adar, Rosh Chodesh Adar, everybody. That's right. 2 day Rosh Chodesh. Extra day of Simcha. That's right. Bringing in the Simcha. And while Purim is not quite a Yom Tov, in some respects it's greater, not going to be talking about Purim quite just yet. In fact, I'll be talking about the other Yom Tovim, namely the Shlosh Regalim. So in Perakov Gimel of this week's parasha, we find an occurrence that is not seemingly so unusual, but is nevertheless striking. As occurs numerous places in the Torah, the Shlosh Regalim are mentioned, the three festivals. First mentioned is Chag HaMatzot, which is Pesach, followed by Chag HaKatzir, which is Shavuot, and finally Chag HaAsif, which is Sukkot. The opening pasuk uses the term Shlosh Regalim, whereas the closing pasuk, after the festivals are individually mentioned, uses the term Shlosh Pe'amim, which literally means three times. There are three festivals, which are three times, namely each one inherently has its own significance despite being part of an interconnected set. Now, the next pasukim are not strange in their own right, as they occur several times throughout the Torah, but it's their proximity specifically to the three festivals that is, in fact, intriguing. They read Lo Tizbach al Chametz Dam Zivchi V'lo Yalin Chelev Chagi Ad Boker. You shall not bring slaughterings, for lack of a better word, upon Chametz, the blood of my offerings, and you shall not leave the forbidden fats of my festival until morning. Now this pasuk contains the commandments to not bring any Chametz upon a Mizbech, upon the altar, at any point during the year, and the prohibition as well of notar, which is leaving the fats overnight that are required to be burnt, really leaving anything over that needs to be burnt or consumed. Now, we had just mentioned Pesach several psukim ago, and now the Torah mentions Chametz. Interesting. So let's keep moving on. The next pasuk begins, Reshit bikorei admatcha tavi beit Hashem lokecha. The first fruits of your land you shall bring to the house of Hashem your God. This refers to the mitzvah of Bikurim, which is specifically tied to Shavuot. So now that the Torah has echoed the themes of Pesach and Shavuot, it stands to reason that the following phrase or following mitzvah should in fact echo Sukkot. However, the pasuk then continues, or the psukim continue, Lo tifashel gedi b'chelav imo, which is very famous and very well known, and what in the world does it have to do with Sukkot? You shall not cook a kid in its mother's milk, one of the sources for kashrus. What's the relation? So the Abarbanel sheds a fascinating light on this and confirms that this commandment is actually in fact tied to the festival of Sukkot. He first quotes his Rav by giving a possible reason for the prohibition of meat and milk, in that milk is something that cooks quickly, whereas that meat takes a long time to cook, on average. However, milk is also something that is more easily attainable and more quickly produced, such as a nursing baby, animal feeding from its mother. The milk requires virtually no effort to be given. However, meat requires the sacrificing of life rather than giving it, and also requires substantial effort to procure, prepare, and to cook it. Now, the milk and the meat of an animal represent two distinct aspects of life and methodology, and thus should not be combined, but rather each used separately at the appropriate instance. In fact, I had actually heard from one of my rebbeim, or really more of a friend of the family, an idea through Chazal, one of the many, many reasons. I mean, obviously it's a chok that we can't eat milk and meat, but there are many potential reasons given, and a similar idea is that milk is more of a life-giving force, you know, as it's a nourishment to give, you know, a child, a baby animal, whichever, whereas meat involves the death of an animal. So we can't combine a life-giving force with a death force, so to speak. So that's another interesting way of looking at it. But getting back to what the Abarbanel says, he points out that it was considered actually a very special treat for non-Jews to cook milk and meat, and that the goat, the kid goat, meat actually cooks very quickly and thus can be prepared more easily for the masses than many other kinds of meat. And the time at which they traditionally celebrated and feasted on this meat that was cooked with the milk was after they finished their harvesting for the year. And Sukkot is specifically called Chag HaAsif, the festival of gatherings, because it is the time of the year when the final crops are harvested and collected before the rainy season starts. And it's also the third and final of the three festivals, and ultimately the time to establish our distinction from the non-Jewish world. Despite that, on the fact that we bring the 70 korbanos for the Umas Olam, but then we bring a special one just for us on the Chag HaShmini Atzeret, which essentially fully maintains or creates our distinction. But not getting into that right now. But on Sukkot, not only do we go outside when others are going in, and not only do We collect unique fruits and branches to shake, but we are right out of Yom Kippur and look at the world with a clean perspective of holiness. Now, just as milk and meat must be distinct, so too Jews and non-Jews must be distinct. The Abarbanel mentions that eating meat cooked with meat is, in a sense, inherently cruel, since the meat, this animal which is no longer alive, had used its milk to nourish its young, right? And therefore, he connects it with the commandment to not sacrifice an animal until it is at least 8 days old, right? Kind of a similar idea of against cruelty, or at least a lesson to us, right? It must stay with its mother for at least 7 days. For its first 7 days, the status of the animal, in a certain sense, is milk, right? It gets pure nourishment from its mother that we cannot take the animal away from. Only afterwards can one or both of the animals be separated to be utilized as meat. This notion of a new opportunity on the eighth day is also symbolized by circumcision and also the Chag of Shemini Atzeret, which, as I mentioned, is connected to Sukkot, but is in fact a Chag in its own right. Right. So in a certain sense, on Sukkot, we're representing the life, the nourishment of milk, and then we transition, again, this is a much longer conversation, but we transition into, so to speak, the meat of Shemini Atzeret, something which we can fully utilize in a more developed and processed state. Again, this one does not fit well with the whole life and death thing, but if you take into effect that we believe that the neshama of the animal is elevated when a kosher shechita is done, and that Shemini Atzeret corresponds to the number 8, which means going above and beyond, then in a certain sense it makes us above and beyond death. However that works, that's also something to be fleshed out a little bit more. And yes, I said fleshed out. Anyway, so the Abarbanel also notes that the three integral festivals do in fact follow a pattern. Now, Pesach is Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is the exit from Egypt. Shavuot is Hodah, thanks, and we bring a special carbon Todah on a carbon of Thanksgiving, not on Thanksgiving, on Shavuot, don't get confused. Sukkot is the recognition of, in fact, the full picture. And as I've explained before, both in my written Divrei Torah and, in my audio shiurim, that the third leg of the proverbial stool is Sukkot and Gemilut Chasadim. The three regalim correspond to many things. It corresponds to the Avos, it corresponds to Torah Avos, and Gemilut Chasadim. It corresponds to many different sets of three. And in order to have something balanced, you need to have at least three legs. And that third leg is Sukkot. So in a certain sense, Sukkot is, in a certain sense, and I hate to say it this way because it's not exactly what I mean, but is in a certain sense more essential than Pesach and Shavuot, since it completes the trifecta and makes Pesach and Sukkot part of the Shalosh Regalim. Right, it's the third pillar upon the world, which corresponds to the third pillar which the world stands, that of Gemilut Chasadim, bestowing kindness. Which, again, bestowing kindness also is related in a certain sense of giving milk, right, to a newborn or to a young animal, and to actually be weaned from that is actually the word gomel, right? Gemila, it can also mean to be weaned. So, in a certain sense, it's all amazingly, amazingly interconnected, and just touching the surface of it. Now, the concept of three in Judaism represents a chazaka, a firm establishment, or as the Abarbanel explains, something which repeated three times is affirmed as truth, as emes, which is also interesting because the third the third of our forefathers is Yaakov, who in addition to being Tiferet, is also has the trait of emes. Now, the mitzvah of Lo Tivashel Gedi B'chel Imosh, not cooking a kid in its mother's milk, occurs precisely three times in the Torah. And this correlates, among other things, to the notion of the three times a year we come together as a distinct but unified people to the temple in Yerushalayim, which culminates in the third and completing festival of Sukkot. There's also additional reasons as to three halachas we learn out from it, but not getting to that now. But we do see in the fact that there's a parallel and that it does complete the lessons that all three of these festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, are echoed in the following three halachos that occur right afterwards in the Torah, the third one of which being, which teaches us the lesson, and now may we be zochet to be able to return the temple in Yerushalayim to ultimately celebrate Sukkot, to hear Hakel and everything, and be able to experience the Chagim the way they were meant to be experienced speedily in our days. Shabbat Shalom.